FYLP is sponsored by CapturedPrey.com. Visit CapturedPrey.com today for all your import and third-party Transformers needs, and save even more through the Captured Prey Loyalty Program. You can also save on shipping on domestic orders of $150 or more. See website for details. CapturedPrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service. Mega Toy Fan. Maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com for all your vintage toy needs. You can also find Mega Toy Fan at popular robot and toy conventions year-round. Minimize your costs and maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com.
In a cold, faraway world, a battle is raging between evil and good. From the stones.
Kusapja here. Welcome to Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure. TFYLP for short. Join us and discuss the latest in Transformers fandom. Now, where did I put that chorus stop? Ratchet, will you take the chorus stop?
Transformers! Defenders of truth! Robots who fight in disguise!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, TFYLP, episode number 183, recorded January 8th, 2016. We are back from our holiday hiatus. We took a couple weeks off, and now we're back. This is the first episode of 2016. Hope everyone had a great holiday. I know I did. I know Brett did. Well, happy birthday, Megamus.
Oh, happy birthday.
Embarrass him on our on the show first thing. So,
well, how old is he? How old are you?
Older than 30.
Put it this way: he's still not 20. As old as Dawn.
That's true. I'm still not the oldest.
But yeah, we're here tonight. We got a really great show for you. Of course, we always has always have a really great show. You know, we don't want to put those sucky shows out. You know, but. You know, on the heels of the last episode, we had a great gift exchange, and then we had the surprise guests of Richard Newman and Paul Eiding. Want to thank those gentlemen once again for joining us on our last live episode. Gary Chalk was scheduled to join us, but due to some traffic issues, he wasn't able to get home in time. But we are working on getting him back on the show at a future date, so stay tuned for that. But tonight, we've got a really, really great subject tonight. We're talking with Eric. Forgive me if I mispronounce this. Right, Siebenhaller?
Siebenhaller, yeah. Screaming Holler.
And later on, we'll be joined by Mr. Wayne Park. Both of these gentlemen worked for Hasbro with Rick up until, well, I guess for the last 15, 20 years or so.
Yeah, Wayne a little bit longer. I was about 13 years. Yep.
Yeah. So those of you who are listening and watching to the show, a lot of the toys that you have on the shelf right now that you've purchased in the last 10, 15, 20 years, these gentlemen have a lot to do with what you have on your shelf. And I'm sure we're going to hear some great information and some great stories about these great toys that we love. Want to kick off the show. Of course, I am Deron Land, a.k.a. Weird Wolf. With me is Megamus tonight, birthday boy. Also, Rick Alvarez.
Hello.
And then we've got 2016. And then we've got Eric with us. Eric, you want to give us a little bit of background about yourself and tell us how you came to work on the Transformers brand?
Yeah, so you know, the basic story is, you know, I was an industrial design major. I went to Purdue University, and I wanted to kind of pursue. When I first started in that major, I didn't have a real clear idea of where I wanted it to take me. But one day, a guy from Kenner, Brian Chapman, he came to my school, and he was like, giving a presentation on, you know, toys. A light bulb went off in my head. I'm like, holy cow, this guy, who at one point in time went to Purdue, majored in the same thing I did, wound up going to Kenner and working on, you know, at that time it was, he was given a Beast Wars presentation, which was still relevant at the time. And I was like, yeah, this is, it seems right. And I kind of just kept in contact with him, exchanged emails, made a few phone calls and so on and so forth, made a good enough impression to get an internship. And that's where things started kind of taking root, you know. My first week actually spent there was working on G.I. Joe, and they wanted me to design vehicles, and I'd never designed a vehicle a day in my life. So that came and went really quickly. Then they sent me over to the Star Wars team. They're like, well, can you do inputs for figures? I'm like, yes. And they saw what I drew, and they're like, ah, you're too stylistic. So that came and went. And then they're like, where can we send you now? And Aaron Archer, who was the head of the Transformers team at that time, was like, I need somebody. I need somebody really bad, because he was in the early development of Armada, and he didn't have anybody working for him. And I'm like, yeah, I'll help out. And things just kind of fell in place there. You know, him and I had the personality types that meshed well, and, you know, I had the work ethic and the drive to, like, just pump out a lot of ideas that I, you know, I thought they made sense at the time, and clearly he thought they made some sense too. But yeah, you know, that was my first internship. That was in 2001. Then I had to go back to school for my senior year. And when I graduated in 2002, I really wanted to work at Hasbro, but they weren't offering jobs at the time. So I worked with people there, you know, had some conversations, and found myself in a fun position where I basically took a second internship and bought myself time within the company to, like, you know, establish myself, come back to work at the tail end of Armada. And, you know, when that internship was up, that was when the paperwork came through for a full-time job. And that was the beginning of it.
Let's say, Eric, what were your crowning achievement in Armada be?
Please see Tom.
No, that was actually all Aaron Archer. Mine, you know, coming in at the very beginning of Armada and at the tail end, like, my involvement was very, very minute. But the most significant thing I contributed was the design of that laser beak, which was much maligned in the community of fans. So you can imagine, like, me, I felt so proud of it when I was drawing it. I was like, yeah, this can totally work. This is fun. Then, you know, periodically Aaron Archer would send me emails and stuff like, here's where we're at right now. Here's the model of it. Or here's the Toy Fair images. And that was about the time that I started becoming aware of, like, the fan sites. So I started reading some of them. And I, you know, I was a kid in college. I'm like, oh, my God, these people are so mean.
Welcome to the Transformers fandom. Yeah.
Why are you so mean to me?
Yeah, exactly. I was trying to do work. I'm like, why? What did I do? It was good, right? No. But as you know, I kind of took one on the chin there, and I'm like, you know.
Well, look on the bright side. At least now there's something that gets just as much of the same. This is Combiner Wars Buzzsaw.
Oh my!
Yeah, it's a great figure. But
also remember, all the hating that was towards you was very short lived, because they moved on to another thing that they hate, and another. You were just the flavor of the week. That's all.
Yeah. As I got more time under my belt at Hasbro, I kind of became very well rehearsed in fandom reactions. And you know, my skin thickened up, and I was fine. I can laugh it off now. It's
that's definitely something I had to learn.
Hell with them.
So, Eric, you started off in Armada, Laserbeak, and to this day, you still hold the record for having designed the most Transformers ever by anyone at Hasbro.
Yeah, I don't know the exact number, but I think it's well up in the maybe high 200s.
Wow.
Maybe low 300s. But yeah, it's a lot of stuff. And, you know, you figure you come in for Armada, Energon, Cybertron, the beginning of the classic series, you know, which eventually became Generations, had a good amount of things that happened in that. What else we have? The first three movies, ton of product there. Transformers Animated, my favorite. Power Core Combiners, and Bot Shots, and then even the Transformers Prime first edition figures. Like, that kind of spans like 9 years of my life. And it was fun.
It begs the question, what's it? I mean, I know you've had this question at BotCon before. You've had to have. But what's it like, you know, going with a figure from designing board, sketching it out for the first time, seeing the prototypes, and then finally walking into, say, a Walmart or a Target and seeing that toy hanging on the peg that you designed? What's the emotions, the thoughts running through your head?
Well, I would actually like to add one thing to that. It's not so much at the end when I get to see it on the shelf. I get the most sense of job fulfillment and happiness, and I maintain this opinion throughout my entire career at Hasbro. I maintain that the best thing about being a toy designer is getting to see kids or man kids get super excited about what you have took a part in. And, you know, you've spent a whole year making that one toy. That's a year out of your life, and a lot of times you really, really, really appreciate that moment when you get to see it, even if it's just one person, one little kid, just so excited about that one moment that it's like, Mom, we have to get this beautiful, beautiful Transformer. I love it. He's awesome. He's got an axe. He chops Decepticons. I'm like, that's perfect. That's the magic. That's the magic that happened to me when I was a kid, and I always very happy to see that same feeling carry forward into, you know, into the kids and man kids who play with them today.
So, Britt, do you have a question?
Well, I'm trying to figure out what exactly did you do as far as, I mean, the whole, you came up with the concept, the design. I mean, how much of that was you?
So, yeah, I also, you know, you have to look at, like, any Transformer that gets made is one part Hasbro, one part Takara Tomy. Takara Tomy is the easier of the scenarios to explain because they do a lot of the model making and the engineering and, you know, a lot of the production dynamics and stuff like that. Whereas we at Hasbro oftentimes kind of took the lead in the planning and the management of things. So we would come up with the artistic concept of what we wanted the vehicle to look like and what we wanted the robot to look like, what the features would look like. But then it also didn't just go in the way of like a one-off character, as I'm sure is widely known throughout much of the Transformers community. Like, a lot of our segments have features associated with them. So that's planned out from our side early on, and we kind of compare ideas with Takara Tomy and what they feel like they can execute, and together we just come up with this cohesive thing. So again, if you want to really look at it, like what Hasbro does, it's just a lot of the upfront management, the ideation, the artistic aspect of it, and kind of the marketing machine behind it, whereas Takara Tomy, for our purposes and how we develop things together, they do a wonderful, wonderful job actually helping our ideas come to life.
Well, to expand on that, Eric, Hasbro, for the most part, would also come up with a line plan saying, these are the characters that we're going to do. And then oftentimes, Eric and the other designers would take the lead in saying, all right, this is going to be the silhouette of Energon Optimus Prime. Mm-hmm. And he's going to have wings, he's going to have this key, he's going to have mini comports here and here. And then, so that would be figured out by Eric, and then that goes to Takara Tomy for the engineering part of it.
Yep.
Are you given, like, the name, maybe a brief, whatever, or do you come up with that? Are you the one that says, well, we're going to do Energon Optimus Prime, and this is how we want him to look, and then that goes...
I would say there are scenarios where the name of the character doesn't come right away. But, you know, if it's Optimus Prime, if it's any one of those A-list or B-list characters, we would kind of know that right away. But, you know, some characters, let's take, in some cases, what happened, like, with the Power Core Combiners, I never designed any of those characters with any real name in mind other than the one that looks like Huffer. But, even still, like, there's still some variances in it. And then I remember there was one time we actually had a race car Power Core Combiner who he had a name issue in Europe.
Spastic.
right.
Yeah.
And I was just dumbfounded. I'm like, you know, I didn't see that one coming at all. And I was like, I thought it was a cool name. And, you know, next thing I know, you know, it's on the message boards and we're getting calls from legal. And I'm like, oh, no.
I like the fix for it, too. It was actually printed. The packages, from what I recall, are actually printed with Spastic on it. And then there was a sticker that was placed over the top.
Yeah, right over the top.
Yeah, I think I still have one of those without sticker on it.
Yeah.
From the free pile.
So, oh, yeah. So that was one of those instances where you came up with a name and they changed it. I'm kind of curious if you came up with a design or, like you said, a silhouette or whatever, mm-hmm. and when they came back with it, you were just like, this is nothing like what I thought it was going to be. It was absolutely nothing like what you thought.
You know, a lot of times when stuff like that would happen, you know, we weren't trained to have those knee-jerk reactions. We were trained to kind of like try to work with, you know, our partners to figure out a way to make the best out of a situation that might not be that great. And, you know, sometimes, you know, a toy would come out not as awesome as you'd hope. Sometimes they would come out way better than you'd ever hoped. But it was, you know, in those situations that it's not perfect, I think, you know, you always have to keep in mind your schedule. Like when you're designing these toys at Hasbro, like, you can't just have a toy and then decide it doesn't look great and then just cut it completely. Like, you've already invested so much money in developing these things, you got to just find a way to make it work and to fulfill your line plan promise. So sometimes, you know, Star Wars does this a lot. They may take a figure who needs a little bit more work and they'll just move them to a later wave or something like that. We would do the same thing on Transformers as well. But yeah, you know, you just kind of take what you're given, and you, as an industrial designer, your basic job is to be a problem solver one way or another. You're not just solving problems with your creativity and your thought process or your wrist. You know, sometimes it's just people management and how to work with people without losing your head.
Well, I'm sure that whenever you're designing a Transformer, let's say you're given a name, let's say Bumblebee, and you have an idea in your head how you want this character to look. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm sure there's a whole lot of give and take between not only yourself, but others at Hasbro, and then you got Takara Tomy coming back and saying, okay, you want it to look like this, but it's not really doable within the production side of things, and then yeah. You've got to go back to the drawing board on some things.
Yeah, so that's happened. You know, I would say that happened early on a lot more than it did later on, with the exception of you know, the Michael Bay movies. Like, by the time we had gotten to animated, I had basically gotten so well rehearsed and I could understand what Takara's limitations were as far as engineering and transformation processes, that I could get about 98% of the way there with my art and send all that stuff over to them. I would give them a kind of a rough schematic, kind of showing them what I thought the transformation could be like. And they would pretty much, like, yeah, 98% of the animated designs, they went through as I had planned. So it was just like me honing my craft along the way. So, like, early on, you know, the Armada Energon time frame, I didn't know as much. And I had all these, like, big grand visions about what things could be. But by the time I got to animated, I streamlined everything. I'm like, this is what's real. This is how I can make things look, just by focusing on simple shapes, you know.
Was you getting ready to say something, Brett?
No.
So basically, you're the one that would sit down at a drawing board and think, okay, I want the character to look like this, and in order for it to get from this visual form to this visual form, this needs to flop up, this needs to twist around. I mean, what was that process like? And, I mean, how did you go about doing that?
And is there a specific example you could use?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's not easy. It's kind of akin to, like, trying to solve a Rubik's Cube, and you're trying to solve a 3D puzzle with known shapes. So a lot of times in the process, I would always start with the vehicle. And the vehicle would inform everything I needed to know about that character. So Optimus Prime is the simplest example, you know. When he's a semi-truck of whatever, you know, if he's the cab over or if he's the long nose truck, those things influence what's happening in the robot mode. But I would kind of like daisy train everything together. I would try to find out where, okay, my first cue was always, where do the wheels go? And as I was doing that, then, you know, naturally, like, you know, if I'm starting at the feet, and the feet have wheels on it, then we know that there's something else through the natural connection of how the vehicle's put together. You could start to understand how the anatomy could kind of be pliable to where the other vehicle parts are going. So eventually you're going to end up with like, oh, the windshield goes here. Oh, the doors go here. Oh, you know, the front nose of the cab goes here, so on and so forth. But again, like, I'm going to go back to animated. Like, everything just kind of worked out really wonderfully there because we got to simplify so many things instead of worrying about, like, you know, I really admire what Michael Bay did with some of his artistic decisions in those movies. But when it came to time to make the toys, it was really challenging because a lot of the things that he did, while it looked great on the movie or on the movie screen, it was so hard to replicate all that like fine detail in our product because we weren't allowed to make that many small parts move due to safety regulations and stuff like that and cost restrictions. But with animated again, I got to work hands on with Derek and try to, as he and his team were like figuring out the vehicles and what the robot modes would look like, I would just kind of come in and I'd do overlays over his art and I'd be like, yeah, what if we move the wheels from the legs to the hips? Or, you know, let's move these doors from here, you know, on the arms, let's move them onto the back or something like that. And, you know, it's a case by case scenario, but ultimately, like, it's fun to have that interaction between the artist on the entertainment side and the artist on the toy side. But again, getting back to like what that's like, kind of dovetailed off there. I can honestly say I'm just like a weird guy. I just think like that. Like, I can look at things and I can put them together or figure out how they're made or, you know, figure out how the parts move around inside of stuff. And, you know, not that I'm like some kind of, you know, savant engineer or anything like that. I just kind of understand how things move.
Hey, Eric, I would probably say, since I know you, that animated is probably one of your favorite things.
Yes.
Transformers history. Do you want to talk about some of the characters that we didn't get in toy form? Some of the ideas that you had and some of the direction that the line was going to go into before everything kind of shifted towards the movie?
Yeah, you know, if I don't know if you guys are very familiar with the AllSpark Almanac, but they gave you a good look at what we called Marauder Megatron. And what that entails for the character was he was going to become a triple changer. So he had a tank mode and he had like a kind of a crazy space jet looking mode. And then also, like, in his robot mode, he had, like, twin blasters. And he also had this kind of turret-looking thing on his chest. But story-wise, what was going to happen and what we had spoken about with the Cartoon Network team was ultimately like Megatron was going to work with Black Arachnia to kind of do to himself what some other scientists did to Blitzwing. So they were going to turn him into a triple changer, and it was going to make him a little cuckoo in the head, and all kinds of craziness was going to ensue, which I thought was kind of cool. And we kind of preemptively designed the toy just as inspiration for Derek, and you know, we got as far as the prototype stage, and that was fun. That was one I really wish would have come out. The other would have been the Power Master Optimus Prime, which also in that same AllSpark Almanac book, we had gotten as far as the like right before the prototype stage. There's like still like the computer drafting stage and like the SolidWorks models and stuff like that, which everything I was seeing at that point in time looked really great, and I was super happy with it. But what it would have meant as far as like what could have been in season 4 for him was, I think we had talked about Sentinel Prime becoming the new Magnus on Cybertron, and he wanting to be a little bit more powerful and a little bit more have a little bit more showmanship, he built this Power Master suit for him. And somehow Optimus Prime winds up, you know, taking it, and he uses that as like his new mode, and now like he can completely like I mean, at the end of season 3 when Optimus was fighting Megatron, he was kind of competing on the same level as like, oh, now Optimus can fly, he's got the jetpack and he can do all this cool stuff. But the Power Master suit would have taken it to the next level. Like now, physically, it didn't matter if he was in the air or on the ground or anywhere, he could compete physically with Megatron and be roughly on the same scale as him in size. So that was kind of fun. That was another one that I thought was had a lot of potential, and it could have really, you know, had we kept on going, I think it would have been fun.
Were there any talks of, I know there was a lot of fans that was begging for an animated Omega Supreme. Were there any of those on the drawing board?
No. We never made it that far in the product line.
We had talked about it a couple times. About the leader class one.
Yeah.
I
will say this. Anything that Derek worked on, most of the time I would try to help him out and help him plan the robot in such a way that if we ever did make a toy, we could get still pretty close. So if we ever did get to go down that road, even to this day, like I think it's totally feasible and we could make it look spot on.
And it would need to have the remolded head to make the
lug nut supreme.
The lug nut, yeah. Omega lug nut.
So this is kind of a general question, not necessarily animated specific, but a lot of characters in Transformers homage or take a lot of design cues from previous versions or iterations of that character. For example, Optimus Prime generally has the same shape head, generally has a face mask, and is a semi-truck, and has certain design aspects that you come to look for, like the smokestacks on the shoulders, you know, windshield on the chest, things like that. What is the... I'm sure it makes it more challenging in many aspects, but in other aspects, it saves of your how I'm trying to figure out how to put this.
Take your time, man. Don't worry.
Well, I'm trying to formulate. I had it in my head, and I'm trying to formulate how I want to ask it. I guess what I'm trying to say is. How is it working on a figure that is based on an earlier version of that character? Let's say you have a Bumblebee, and it's like animated Bumblebee took a lot of design cues in many aspects from the original Bumblebee. It was a small compact car, you know, the hood split apart into the feet, all that type of stuff. How does that help you and how does that hinder you, I guess?
Okay. Well, what you're really talking about is iconography, and that's kind of big in what we do in toy design. And it's particularly big when you have characters that belong to a very strong IP like Transformers. So I'm going to give you a few kind of a timeline scenario. Like when we were on Armada, that iconography was only loosely based on, you know, Optimus just being a semi-truck, you know, because of course in that design for him, he had the grill as his chest. So we kind of foregone a few other things just to try something new. And I feel like for Armada, Energon, and Cybertron, our goal was to try and push the boundary of who these characters are and what their iconography really is. But it wasn't really until we got into classics and into the movies and, you know, animated in Transformers Prime that that iconography became a lot more important. And I say important in the sense that, like, not that it wasn't important before, but it became kind of a staple where we are, when we're writing documents and stuff to our internal partners or external partners, it's like, these are things that Optimus Prime has to have. So, you know, as you said, there are certain details that just are there and you don't want to mess with them. Now, I was the type of designer that even with certain limitations, I was able to find a lot of different solutions for it while still keeping it. Because again, my whole thing is I'm a problem solver, and I think there's no wrong way to solve a problem unless you're just completely breaking the rules that you just established. So on that front, for me, I kind of liked the challenge of being limited like that and seeing how far I could create these differences in Optimus Prime. And it really wasn't too hard considering that, you know, from between classics, who was, you know, the cab over truck, animated, he was also cab over, but he was more like the fire truck design. He had something kind of, he had a cool shape going on with his vehicle that it helped me out. The movie version of Optimus Prime, that, you know, being the long nose truck, that helped out again. So it's like, I feel like even though you're in, when we're talking about this iconography, we're kind of looking at largely more specific terms with the robot mode, but you're able to play with things a little bit more when it comes to the vehicle mode. And the vehicle mode, again, as I said earlier, is one of the things that can influence the most change or influence the most decisions that happen with the character. So, again, that's something I liked about it. And, I don't really have anything negative to say about it, but I think if there was a challenge that you could probably get a little frustrating with, is like sometimes you just stumble in the same directions over and over, and then you have to find something to tweak. And, you know, sometimes you don't know if that's changing a transformation step here or incurring a little bit of extra cost here to add, you know, extra parts or extra, you know, smokestacks, or, you know, put the wind vane on top to make things, you know, a little more fresh there. That could transform into a blaster. Kind of fun.
Eric, what do you think the most challenging character or figure was for you to design?
Oh boy. That's a really good question. I'd actually have to go look at my files and see if I had.
Well, what do you think out of all the figures that you've touched is your favorite then?
Actually, let's go back to the first question. The most challenging one is actually it's challenging twofold, because one, it was the movie 3 Sentinel Prime. So that fire truck, you know, we knew that the fire truck was going to be what he had to look like in the first place. But we had some reference from Michael Bay's team that didn't look anything like it was, like it could transform into that fire truck. It looked like it was more of his Cybertronian mode. So
it was almost as if they you were thinking, hey, let's screw with them at Hasbro and send them this design that's supposed to come from this. See what they do.
Yeah, and, you know, again, like, there's so many layers and so many moving parts. Like, who knows what they were thinking, or if it was just, like, maybe they didn't have a need for that character in their schedule. You know, I don't know. But it left us with plenty of plenty big problems to solve. So he was challenging in the extent that we had no idea what he really looked like in his Earth mode, in his robot mode on the movie. So I kind of worked with a few of my freelance friends, and I was like, you know, here's what the vehicle mode looks like, and here's what a Cybertronian robot mode looks like, and here's the toy that we've kind of got the general transformation kind of pinned down. We want you to go in and try just taking a shot in the dark, seeing what this guy might look like. And we got back several passes on things, and then I would work with them. I would, like, kind of draw on top of their drawings and just try to figure stuff out until I felt comfy with it. And at the end of the day, when you saw the final design in the movie, it isn't really close at all. but at the same token, I think you also look at a lot of the movie toys, and they're not close at all either. So it's like you're kind of in that kind of 70% ballpark range, which is... That's fine. Well,
was that largely in part to the to how the movies were developed? I mean, a lot of it was kept under kept under wraps. That, I mean, I'm sure there was a lot of talk going on between Hasbro and the Michael Bay team, but they would, in order to bring a concept to the screen, sometimes have to change something after they'd already sent you what their design was.
Yeah, Their process is a lot more fluid than ours is, and they can change things very late in the game, whereas we, like, again, like, from start to finish, you know, it's a year for our entire process to, you know, from the first sketch to get that thing in package on the shelf. And there's some flexible points during the schedule that you can make some last-minute changes, but there's always a drop-dead date. There's a point of no return. It's like you have to ship what you've got, and if you don't, then you're gonna not be happy with the financial results at the end of the day for that particular wave. So we would try to avoid that as much as possible. And, yeah, you're right. Like, the way that their process worked and the way our process worked didn't always – congeal. And, you know, at the end of the day, like, they're trying to make a great movie and we're just trying to make great toys. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't.
Brett, did you do you have any question?
One of my favorite lines was the classic lines. The classic line. And I'm taking it by what you said, that you had something to do with crime.
Mm-hmm.
okay. Just because it's on my mind. Okay.
Yeah, fire away.
Why the heck couldn't you get those panels off his arm? Why couldn't you have put them somewhere else, anywhere, threw them, I don't care.
Yeah.
To me, that was a... It was almost, at the time, it was the perfect, in my opinion, representation of crime. It was beautiful.
Yeah. It was sad. I think it still is, actually.
Well, but then it had these little panels. You know?
So,
and I know you don't have a lot to do with that, but...
Yeah, but that's a scenario where when the toy was first designed, it was designed as a deluxe scale figure. And then we decided to pantograph it up, which is a... I don't know if you know what that is, but it's a process where you can basically take a small scale figure and then they'll do their digital wizardry with it. They'll make it just a scaled up version. So with that being said, the decision to move it up from deluxe to Voyager size figure was something that happened late in the game. And it was something. So, okay, that's one factor. So making it a larger scale figure late in the game is one thing. Had we known it was going to be a Voyager figure from the very get-go, we could have done a few things differently, like those panels. But with that being said, we developed it with a cost structure in mind of a deluxe scale toy.
Okay.
So with that being said, you have less parts to work with, and some things just are going to be, you know, blowing in the wind. There's going to be, you know, kibble hanging out all over the place.
That's kind of like what happened with the Classics Galvatron. Wasn't it originally designed to be like a Voyager scale, but it was downscaled into a deluxe?
That's one. I didn't actually work on that one, but
I'm pretty sure that was always supposed to be a deluxe.
It was a Bill Rawley. Bill Rawley did that one.
I know there's like these little weird little feet thing that's still on the final toy, but they really don't seem to have a purpose. You know, I mean, they're not in the instructions. I mean, they're just there, you know?
Yeah. Now that you mention it, that's something, you know, if it had been designed as a deluxe scale in the first place, like that's something they probably would have just like left out just to, like, just detail for detail's sake is something that we don't really do, and it's not what we're taught to do on our team.
Yeah.
You know, we like things to be functional and purposeful, and, you know. But, yeah, like, the idea that it could have been a Voyager toy, and maybe it had, like, an alternate mode that you could put it in.
I've seen numerous, fan modes, and that's that kind of bleeds me into another question that I want to ask after this, but to finish up the thought on Galvatron, I've seen a number of fan modes and uses for those feet, you know, but nothing truly official. But it just seems like there were more vestigial, you know, leftovers from the downscale. It seems like it was said at BotCon that it was originally a Voyager and then downscaled into a deluxe, but I could be wrong on that. But
It seems plausible, man.
From a design aspect, seeing fan alterations or fan transformations of designs that you've made. For example, we'll go to the Classics Optimus Prime. Mm. The wind vane that could become his rifle or a rifle for him. I liked the regular rifle that he had. I was the type that I would like half transform it, fold it in half, and then peg it onto his back, and it would just basically be a back piece for him. And from the front view, you couldn't really even see it.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever see things like that and think, "Wow, I didn't think of that when I was designing that toy, but I like how that turned out."
Yeah, did you ever? Quite often, actually. You know, I'm not so bold as to think that, like, you know, I'm the designer. I think of everything. No, I.
How dare them!
I would see stuff all the time, be it, you know, on the boards, or, you know, you go to some of those the BotCons where they show, you know, their either their art or their custom mods or stuff like that, or, you know, I find that stuff inspiring. Like, I looked at it as, that's a really great idea, you know? Yeah. Half the time I'd be like, why didn't I think of that? Wow. You know? I think it's really great that people get into stuff that way. And again, like, you know, I have a son who's four now, and he does all kinds of stuff like that with his Transformers. He's like, "Daddy, I just did this with animated Shockwave." And I'm like, "Holy cow. I never thought of that. That's great." And I always tell them, I'm like, that's part of the fun with toys in general. It's like, you can play with them however you want. You can put this part there even if it's not meant to be. It's whatever makes you happy. It's cool. I like that, and I appreciate that. You know?
Speaking of homages, I know you said you worked on some Armada. I don't know if you worked on Armada Thrust. But now it's come. Things are starting to come full circle. We're starting to get homages now in current lines of Armada figures. Like, well, I mean, we just recently had Generations Armada Thundercracker, Starscream, and now Thundercracker in the Legends line, right, which is the Super Mode, and now in the upcoming Grand Galvatron for Unite Warriors, you got the Armada Thrust being homaged in right. that. So, I mean, did you work on Thrust or Starscream, either of those?
I, so let me, let me, think back. Aaron Archer did the designs and the color guide for Starscream. he did the designs for Thrust, but by the time I got there, I got to do the color guide for him.
And that's
an individual redeco.
Well, I noticed that I think the Unite Warriors Thrust is simply the Unite Warriors or Combined Warriors Air Raid, but I believe they've retooled the wings and gave him a new head, and then he's got the full deco as Armada Thrust.
Gotcha.
Now, going on to the remolding and re-releasing as different characters, early on, years ago, it wasn't really done forethought whenever you were designing a character, okay, this could be retooled and redecoed into another character. But later on, we started getting information that certain characters were designed with two or three different heads to give them a different look and everything. How did that affect your designing of each character? I mean, if one's supposed to be Thunderwing and the other one's supposed to be Black Shadow, did you change the design at all to kind of be like an in-between or?
Yeah, so sometimes that's a situation that sometimes you could plan it out really well and sometimes it was circumstantial. So one of the most clear examples of where it was planned is when we did the classic Starscream, and, you know, when you're doing, you know, Thundercracker and Skywarp, you don't have to change much except for the colors. But then when you get to Ramjet, Thrust, and Dirge, you know, you got to look at different wings and, you know, how the head works and everything. So those things were very much intentional. And in those cases in particular, it wasn't much of a challenge other than just to create the new wings. But yeah, like in other cases where I think things are a little more coincidental, sometimes we have stuff to do with it. I think some of the best examples of it actually are from some of the BotCon figures, like when Animated Blur was transformed into Animated Cheetor. I was like, what? Like, it just completely caught me off guard, but it made so much sense. And I think the mantra of what impressed me so much about it was kind of like, you don't have to be so literal and so slavish about, like, you know, what a character was before. I think as long as you get the head right and the colors kind of in the ballpark, I think you're going to be able to succeed with that different type of character. So where I'm really going with this idea is, like, I didn't find it too challenging in a lot of cases. We would just get the head made and have an idea. And in some cases, you know, you would have a figure in mind, but then you would talk to your legal department, find out that you didn't have that name cleared. So you're like, oh, we got to change everything. And then again, like,
let's slap Autobot or Decepticon on the front of it and then be fine with it.
Yeah, a few of those happened. Yeah.
It's like Autobot Groove. Yeah.
So Eric, before Weeniac joins us, there was that other question you didn't ask for me. What do you think is your favorite Transformer that you've had a part in?
Oh boy. Well, I think I've talked about Animated enough tonight, but
I did have one question about Animated, but go ahead.
Yeah. So my favorite was always Jetfire and Jetstorm, and then I think well after it I started. Well after I left Transformers, I started having a real appreciation for what we did for Lockdown. And the latest one, and I'm only saying this because my son loves it so much, is Animated Wreck-Gar. It was a garbage truck, and my son loves, like, just big, big, loud machines. And he's like, this guy's garbage truck. He's cool. He's got these pinchers, shields, things. I'm like, yeah. And he's silly.
Yeah, so, Rekkar, and I dare to be stupid.
That was a good one. Yeah. Now, I was going to ask you about Lugnut.
Yeah.
Okay. You did the animated version. Did you do when they redid him into the Generations?
I did not. Bill Rawley did that. He's, you know, Lugnut's a really fun character because I know there's a lot of fan discussion about like trying to like hit like him and Bulkhead, even though they were Voyager scale figures, they were tiny. Even when you stood them next to, by tiny, I mean short, not they were bulky figures, but when you put them next to a deluxe figure, they were similar height scale. So those are two characters that I really wish. Well, we obviously made a leader class of Bulkhead.
Yeah, I was going to say that the leader class one looked pretty good.
Yeah,
scale-wise.
Yeah, and he's like, we had to change some things up just because Hasbro doesn't like you releasing the same toy over. So you got to kind of juice one up if you're going to pay a lot more money for it. so we made him kind of a crazy headmaster version. But Lugnut is another one that I wish we could have done at that scale. I think that would have been really cool.
And, you know, we had talked a little bit about the Constructicons and animated, and mm-hmm. you want to touch on that real quick?
Yeah, that was the Constructicon story was something that I think was going to have a little bit more of a fun payoff in season 4. And again, like, you know, it was all discussions with, you know, between us at Hasbro and between the writers and the staff at Cartoon Network. But ultimately what we wanted to do was basically have the Constructicons with Dirt Boss and his Cerebro shells eventually like take over Bulkhead, and they would kind of coerce him into becoming the torso for Devastator. So that was something that we were looking to introduce, and I think it would have been really silly. I actually kind of would have loved it too if we could have added a couple more Constructicons in during the season, but you know, never made it that far. So sad.
So, I totally had a question, and it just totally it was an animated related question too. Oh,
I just got a question. Wasn't it the last episode of animated where they went to back to Cybertron and you saw all the different characters in animated form?
Yeah.
Were there, I mean, as someone that's been working on each of the individual, you know, designs, was there any one of those that you saw and you went, God, I wish I could have done that one. I really wanted to do that.
Yeah. I feel like almost 50% of them were like a variation of Bumblebee, but
that was just the front row, but that's okay.
But no, I mean, Derek really had this really fun idea for Cosmos, and you know, I got to see the model sheet once he drew it, and I still love looking at Cosmos's design to this day, and I'm like, I really wish we could have made that.
What about Grandis?
Grandis.
Oh my God, come on.
He's like a brick. You just go like this.
It doesn't matter. He's a brick now, and everyone wants to see. That thing was just, that was all sorts of just awesome.
Yeah.
No, and all we got was one little panel, one little picture, and people went nuts over it.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think he's, I got to be quite honest. Like, everything that Derek drew, I pretty much fell in love with. And it's one of those series that, you know, I'm going to carry that to the day I die. Like, I really wish we could have done so much more with it than we were allowed to.
I'll be honest, I never was really a big animated fan of the toys. But I honestly believe that that's definitely a series that definitely could have went a little further.
Yeah.
The show itself. I mean, definitely could have went further. Could have had more toys for the line.
Yeah, absolutely. As you know, that was my line, and I had such a crush on that toy line, like for so many reasons. You know, it was like one of the first times I got really heavily involved with the animation studios and the writers, and I got to go on business trips out there by myself half the time just to work with these guys, and it was so much fun. But yeah, you know, I definitely think there was so much potential kind of left on the table there that, you know, I mean, we all know that like the reason everything kind of ended is because Hasbro wanted to start their own studio and get their own network and so on and so forth. And I get it. You know, I understand how business works sometimes, but it's something that I, you know, I'm not going to look back on it bitterly. I always look back on it as that was a really good and special time in my life. And I'm really glad to have had that experience.
Yeah. I got a question about Transformers Prime First Editions here in a moment. But before we do that, take a break for a moment for our sponsors. CapturePrey.com, great toys, great prices, great service. CapturePrey.com. You can save even more with the loyalty program, and also on orders of $150 or more, you can get free shipping domestically and discounted shipping internationally. Also, check out megatoyfan.com. Megatoyfan, maximize your collection while minimizing your costs. You can find Megatoyfan at the greatest conventions year-round, such as BotCon and TFCon. So check out both of those, Capture Prey and Megatoyfan. But my question for the first editions, now, why were there first editions and then Prime RID? Why were there two separate Transformer Prime lines with two different toy designs for the same characters?
Well, I think ultimately what was happening around that time is some cost structures were changing. As far as, like, you know, I don't like to talk too much into the financial side of things, but basically we were at a cutoff point where toys that we used to make for this amount of money were now going to cost just a little bit more money to make. So they had to figure out a way to get to keep those costs in line with what we had before. And I think with that, they designed entirely new, like, features to go along with that. And again, like, one of my things that I was always known for is, like, I like, once we got to classics and I got to, like, implement my design philosophy a little bit more, I always felt like Transformers should just be about transformation. All the other gear and stuff like that was cool, but I saw what happened during the Armada, Energon, and Cybertron series, and a lot of times the features would limit what you could really do with a toy. So the back to the Prime First Edition, like, those were all just kind of in that same philosophy. It's like they're just Transformers. They may have a weapon you can plug on or something like that, but no unifying feature, no overly complex thing to really kind of hog up space for your transformation or anything like that. So I think what was happening, you know, if you look at the timing of it too, it's like, I believe there's another movie coming out, and they had, you know, the movies always tried to have some kind of cool feature with their toys and stuff like that. So yeah, I feel like the conversations that happened between, like, our sales team and the retailers kind of pushed the design team, who was going to continue on the Prime series, to look at other avenues to create excitement for the toys.
You know, I want to pay Eric a quick compliment. Because this is something I didn't understand at the time while I was working with them, but as a parent now and watching how my daughters play with toys, I've come to appreciate this theory a lot more, where Eric would design a toy that if you lost the weapon or if you lost a specific piece, it would still be able to transform properly, and it would be a complete toy.
Mm. Yeah.
When I see a lot of my daughter's figures missing an arm or shoes or legs, but it's like, all right, your Wonder Woman's missing an arm now. So it's not a complete Wonder Woman, but Eric would design a toy, and right, you lost a gun, but it'll still transform and still be a cohesive thing.
Right. I mean, like you were saying before with Prime, with Classics Prime, guns off, he's still a semi.
The one I kept thinking about was Energon Omega Supreme. And I remember we were talking about this one day.
Yeah.
Like, this head, man, what is with this other head? He's like, well, the idea is if you lose the head, because, you know, it's a headmaster, you still got this little tiny head underneath.
Yeah, the post where you could hook it up. Yeah, that was funny.
Being a Headmaster fan, though, all I got to say is take care of your damn toys and keep your accessories together, for crying out loud.
Try telling that to my four-year-old.
Yeah.
All right, so should we welcome? Let's welcome our second guest.
Rick, I'll let you welcome him. I know that you know him better, and I think you can introduce him
the indomitable, the mountain skiing, partying.
He snowboards, by the way.
Snowboarding. Wayne Park, a.k.a. the Wainiac.
How's it going, Wayne? Everybody?
Welcome. Welcome to TFYLP.
Thanks for joining us. We're kind of talking to designers of Hasbro's past tonight. And you have an amazing story of how you came to be at Hasbro, and you've had a very long journey in the toy industry, and you've worked with Varick, and you worked with me, and thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. I hope you guys can hear me okay.
Yes.
This is my first time doing one of these webisodes, so I appreciate you joining me in the conversation.
Well, thank you for coming on here tonight. You want to tell us a little bit about how you got into working on the Transformers brand? What led you into working on it, and then what you actually did for the Transformers brand?
Sure, I was working originally at Tiger Electronics. I was working on the youth electronics, the tween electronics, lifestyle products, and was working with Eric and a lot of Aaron Archer and a lot of the Transformers team trying to sort of incorporate more electronics into the Transformers product line. And then as the movies became a reality and the first movie got up and running, I joined onto the boys' toy design team and was working with the exclusives group, mostly Brian Merton and Rick for a little while there. And doing a lot of the exclusive figures, a lot of redecos, some new tooling, but it was more, you know, I would help out the mainline team when possible and help with the movies that they were developing and keeping that line going, but got to go and then focus on the exclusives, bring a lot of that product to market, did a lot of the theme packs for the movies. I'm not even sure which ones.
There was the Dark of the Moon one.
Yeah, the Dark of the Moon.
Yeah, there was the Walmart ones, the Dark of the Moon ones, and they all had different themes for the third.
Was
movie.
That the ones with like the Human Alliance?
Yeah,
like that. They were all together. Some of those were flipping awesome.
Yeah, it was really good collaboration with the team because you know they had sort of a vision for some of the products that they wanted to do in the mainline. But they were sort of restricted with some of the limitations placed on them by, like, the studio and everything, you know, which characters to promote, which characters to do. So we had a little bit more freedom in the exclusives department where we could do things for a specific client like a Walmart or a Target and give them something unique that they had at the market so that they could promote, like, do a promotion around. And you know, we really came up with those themes and working with, like, Eric and Aaron Archer and Brian Chapman and different people involved that were like working with the studio day in, day out, Michelino and everybody. And we sort of like, we would sit there on the sidelines of these discussions and hear like, oh, it would be so great if we could do this character, if we could put, you know, a legend scale with a, you know, deluxe scale and, you know, and mix up the groupings a little bit, you know? So I guess in that respect, we had a little bit more freedom than the mainline and we could sort of expand a little bit on the themes that we talked about, like the scanning theme, the Dark Side of the Moon theme, things like that. And it was a lot of fun.
Cool.
Yeah, especially we got to do some really awesome deco and color variations that, you know, you could really like throw back, like, you know, to some of the classic characters that the fans would remember from the animated series, mm-hmm. But they won't see in a major motion picture. So that was really exciting.
Wayne would sometimes pull like references like out of his ass. Like, there was one. Okay, space case. It was Reveal the Shield space case.
Yeah.
Wayne had actually done it so that it looked exactly like the G2 Space Kings. And then we came up with a theme. Everything had a theme, so those ended up being translucent. So the whole color got swapped to being a different type of space case. But I was just, I remember seeing that. I'm like, oh, my God, that's perfect. We got to do that.
I have to say that translucent space case was badass. I love that. I love that Echo.
But see, that's I appreciate that because, one thing is like, because we did smaller runs and we did, then the main line, we could do some things that the real diehard fans would get and would pick up on that maybe, a fan that just saw the movie for the first time or was exposed to the Transformers world for the first time may not pick up at the shelf or gravitate towards. But, a real diehard fan who's been with the brand since the 80s would, pick up on. And sometimes we would go a little bit too far and they'd be like, all right, you got to dial back in. You got to make it, you have to make it more relevant to the consumer these days. So, but yeah, we had a lot of fun with
does anybody know who was responsible for the SDCC exclusive? That was the hair metal band Transformers.
Yeah, that
I want that set.
That, yeah.
Who's that?
That is so out there. I'm like, I want it.
Who was that, Brawley?
No. Who's the only guy on the marketing team that would dress up and sing like that?
Yeah, okay.
It's like the Linkin Park Soundwave. I mean, everybody refers to it. Well, I refer to it as Big Butter Soundwave. I don't know if you. I don't know if you've.
That's the gold one, right?
Yeah, I don't know if you've heard the. I think it's on the Bob and Tom show. Big Butter Jesus. But a Big Butter Soundwave because he looked like he's carved out of butter. I mean, it's so hideous. It's awesome. I mean,
that still doesn't have the worst name. The E-Hobby Shining Ultra Magnus has the distinction of having the best.
Piss that Magnus.
Would be fan. Yeah. Piss Magnus. Yeah. That's got the best.
Well, it's translucent yellow, so it just looks like it's solid piss.
Pee jokes are not common in the toy industry at all.
In the fandom.
There were a couple exclusives that I know Wayne worked on, and I don't know where they ended up, but they unfortunately never ended up coming out. One of them, since we got Eric on, was Wasp.
Oh, yeah.
Which was just the repainted animated Bumblebee in the green. And I think you told me that ended up in the trash or something, or just misplaced, or...
Oh, man.
I think, did we ever show that at BotCon? I think we did.
I think we did, yeah. We even went as far as having packaging photographs of it, right?
Yeah, it's weird, some of the... Like, we would do some of these characters, and we would have the plan together, and then you'd have them, like, waiting on the sidelines to be introduced into the product line, but... based on the performance of the overall line, sometimes we didn't get to release some of those characters, or they thought maybe we should focus on other areas, promote the movie more than the animated series or vice versa. So a lot of those characters, they even if they were shown at BotCon or Comic-Con, sometimes they didn't make the cut, because months later, when they get down the road, but they're still floating around somewhere. Hopefully they'll see the shelf eventually, but
I'm still mad that we didn't get Metro Titan out of Generations Metroplex.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the thing. It was working on the exclusives team because we were working with Mainline, with Eric and everybody. They would always have like sort of a wish list of which characters and which sort of themes or playsets we could reintroduce as a different character. And as you know, we even with like... there's so many variations you could do, but to try to keep it relevant to what's being promoted with the movie or the animated series, some of the characters were a little hard to pitch.
So. And sometimes this pertains to kind of a topic Rick was talking about earlier, Wayne, where like we would, on the main line, we would design toys with another head kind of in mind for a redeco. And, and a lot of times it would happen in the main line, but on occasion, it would just kind of fall under your lap.
Yeah, and that was always one of the exciting parts of the job. Was it was almost like, you know, you're doing like a archaeological dig. You're digging through like old tooling plans and old mold plans and everything to see what other parts were available that didn't work, whether it was a weapon, an accessory, a hand. Sometimes we would just change like hands or heads, like you're saying, or just a few body parts to make it a different character. So that was always fun. But anything we did, like Eric said, you know, we would work in conjunction with the mainline team, and they would sort of put together their roster of characters that they would like to see out there, or that haven't been done in a few years, or haven't been updated to meet the mainline characters. Like one of the figures I did was the Deluxe Optimus Prime for the third movie, because he had never been done at that scale. But it was interesting. They said, okay, we'll do it just as an exclusive. We'll keep it, you know. And so I got to, you know, work on simplifying, you know, one of the main characters, Optimus Prime, you know, getting it down and making it work at that scale, so it would look consistent with the other line. And again, when we did that, we said, okay, well, you know, we're gonna invest in these tools, so let's put extra hands, let's put extra weapons, so we can do two or three iterations of this figure, you know, down the road. And that was always fun to do.
One of the coolest things Wayne had done on the exclusive team is that masterpiece Hot Rod.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
Because Wayne just said, "Hey Rick, I wanna put this Target Master. You think that'll be a good idea? You think people will like that?"
It, you know, that was the thing too. It was like we were working with, you know, not only with the Hasbro mainline, but then we also had Takara Tomy, you know, there. So they would tell us, "Oh, we're gonna do this, you know, Rodimus Prime or Hot Rod," and it's like, okay, well, we need to add this, you know, exclusive accessory, or we need to add this, you know, variation, you know, in there so we can, you know, bring it out for this market. And it was always fun, like when they would, you know, we're like, oh, that's a good idea. Yeah, we should do that. We haven't done him recently, you know. And you feel like, okay, we've got something here. If everybody's in agreement that, you know, this would make a cool little accessory, then we have to do it.
Yeah, I remember Takara got jealous that
we came up with it.
They're like, oh, we want to do that. And it's like, no.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. There's working on the teams, there's such a vast amount of knowledge in the characters and the depth of how far you could go. So there's always a lot of opportunity to come up with these, you know, little tweaks that have a big impact.
Hey, Wayne, do you remember that masterpiece Sunstorm you did?
I do.
With the fire on the wings. It was completely different than the Sunstorm that came out of retail like 5 years ago.
I love those ghost flames. That is sick.
I don't think it ever got shown publicly, but we had a masterpiece Sunstorm, and it just had like flames all over it and all down the wings, and the hands were the right colors. And it was just like, yeah, I got shelved, and, you know, like 4 or 5 years later, it finally made it out. But it was a different – someone else had designed a whole new color scheme for it. It was completely different from Wayne's, and that was just one of those things. Like, oh, man, I wish that had kind of fallen into the trash.
Yeah.
You know, and somebody fished it out.
But that was the fun part too, because I think what we did like 3 or 4 different variations of that masterpiece. So it's like okay, how many different variations can we do? And then it's like, okay, we're going to complete the whole team, you know, of all the. So for that one, I was glad when I saw a variation of it come out later, but I was like, okay, I get it. I understand why they didn't launch it when they did, but. You know, they worry about, you know, saturation and getting too many of these same characters out there and things like that. So it's always a juggling act to try and get those sort of ancillary and, you know, third tier characters out there. But that was fun, especially working with a masterpiece. You could get, I mean, you know, compared to like a regular, you only might have like 10 deco hits on a regular figure. With the masterpiece, you sometimes had like over 100. So that was a lot of fun. You could really get involved, especially like that deco that you did, Eric, that camo pattern for Starscream for the movie variation.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, I mean, that, yeah, that, like a lot of times you couldn't even do that many deco hits on a product. But then if we made it, you know, an exclusive version, we could double the deco that they have on the main line, you know, so, and let us do some more, you know, detailed, exclusive variations. That was a lot of fun.
So real quick, Eric needs to take off, but there's a weird little trivia between Wayne and Eric outside of Hasbro that just happened to be like a huge coincidence.
Yeah, I'll tell a story. So I got into toys. I got into toys. Basically, I got out of the Army. I was in the Army. I was in the Gulf War. And when I got back from the Gulf War, went to college, you know, I just wanted to make, I was like, I want to go to art school. I don't care, you know, how it leads. And when I graduated from art school, I finished up with my service obligations. And I was interviewing for Tyco Toys. And they were like, wow, you don't really have the skill set we're looking for, but what did you do in the Army? I said, oh, I was a gunner on a tank during the Gulf War. They said, oh, you're hired, military playsets. So I started designing matchbox playsets for, you know, little Army tanks and everything like that. And fast forward maybe 10, 15 years later, when I started working at Hasbro, I got on the team and met Eric, and we were talking. And I was in 237 armor in Vilsack, Germany in 1990. And when were you there, Eric?
I was there in 98.
Yeah, so
97, 98.
So same unit a few years later. Same, you know. So we had that in common. We could talk about the barracks and the training areas that surround Vilsack, which is a very unknown area of Germany unless you're in the Army or familiar with training bases in Germany.
Yeah,
it's one of those amazing coincidences of two guys
who are toy designers,
go overseas, they're in the same tank division, end up working for the same company on the same team.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
It was.
Hey, Eric, thanks for chatting with us tonight.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was back. A lot of fun. I would happily come back anytime. Just let me know.
All right, thank you so night. Much.
Thank you. Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks. Nice
Eric,
to meet
good
you guys.
To see you, brother.
All right, everybody, take care. We'll talk soon.
Ride high.
All right.
Wayne, I was just trying to think back to all the cool stuff that you did, and one that stuck out in my head that I think Jerome would like. Remember that Unicron, that movie-accurate Unicron.
Oh man, the head. Yeah, we did that. Well, that, you know, that's another thing too. Is like, you know, we would sort of say it was always a balancing act with the mainline, like what you could do, what you could get away with doing the exclusives. And we said, you know, we want to do this as an anniversary edition. We want to do this Unicron, you know, retool the head, because then we had to go get the money to do tooling and everything, and we had really had to pitch it. And after we pitched it and got to go, then Takar Tomy came in and said, we love that idea. We're going to do it. We're going to do it for mainline. So it's like when you get – and then you had the U.S. marketing saying, well, wait a minute. Maybe we should do it for mainline. And you're like, whoa, this is great. But they kept it as an exclusive. I don't even remember. Like, I think they only did like what, like 10 or 30,000 pieces tops?
10,000, I think. Was
it 10,000?
It was Amazon exclusive here.
Amazon. Yeah, Amazon, TR. I think TRU wanted it, but they kept it with Amazon. I mean, Marcello did the art. It was unbelievable. And, Takar Tomy, I think they put it in their main line, right? Or
they did the alternate color version of it.
That's right. They did the different variation. They were so pleased with the way that the head turned out, they put it in their main line. That was really... That was a good project.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh no, I said, you know, it's, I was trying to think back when, you know, Rick contacted me about this, this discussion. I was trying to think back some of the products and the sets that I worked on. And it's like, I was pulling up my old files. I'm like, wow, we did a lot of different items, and you know, and then I was trying to see, like, well, did this one ever make it to market? You know,
there are so many toys that you designed that got the final package that never came out, unfortunately.
Yeah, every now and then I'll see something similar on the web that exists, and I'm like, oh, did that finally make it to market? Did they do that? So, I mean, I haven't been with the company for about 2 years now. So it's fun when I go to the stores and do little research, a little recon, see what's out there.
How does that happen? I mean, you go through all the trouble of redesigning ahead, designing ahead or something, getting all the way to final packaging. Okay, we're not going to release it. I mean, it just seems kind of waste, you know?
Yeah, well, it's funny because, you know, the retailers come to us with a wish list of sort of we would like to do, you know, a promotion around this time of year, and we would like it to make at least, you know, this much in sales. So you have to figure out, okay, is it a 5,000, 10,000, 30,000 piece, you know, program in order to hit the numbers that they want to, you know, generate. And then it you know, sometimes we start this development, you know, a year, 2 years out. So by the time it gets towards release of this product, you know, like a Walmart might come back and say, you know what, we've done 3 exclusives this year. We've hit our mark. We don't need the 4th. And that one is already, you know, developed and ready to ship. And we would try to find another market for it, whether it was if it was a Walmart, you know, we might say, okay, well, how about we do this next year? We roll it into the next year line, or we could do it as a con exclusive or something. You know, because we put that development money into it, you want to recoup that in your earnings. But it was really just a balancing act because they would put their wish list together, and you know, you're trying to fulfill their wishes, but you know, sometimes the market was off. Sometimes we missed the mark with, you know, we thought, they're definitely going to go after these theme packs. And, you know, maybe just one character sold better than the other 2 or 3. So it was always just a juggling game. You took your best shot and we put our best foot forward. And hopefully the retailers and the teams, you know, would think that it was a good product to put out there.
An example of that was, did you do the Dark Energon series for Prime?
I was working, I left the team right before, like I started working on that, but yeah, I left the team right around that time it was being developed. So yeah,
that's an example of like a set that was developed for one retailer, then they backed out and I think eventually went to Big Bad Toy Store as an exclusive.
Yeah.
He's also the guy responsible for doing that great Seacons reissue and bringing that to America.
Oh, yeah, I still have that. I like that set. Those wild colors, man, from the 80s, the teals and pinks and purples. Mm-hmm. I was doing those deco specs, and everybody was just like, what are you thinking?
I remember Wayne came into my office one day. He's like, Rick, we need to photograph this for the packaging, but we don't have the Seacons. Do you have them? So I'm like, all right, Sure. So the next day I bring in my G1 Seacon set. I'm like, all right, just don't lose any parts. They photograph them, and that's what's on the model shop did a great job of cleaning up for me too.
Yeah.
And that's what's on the back of the packaging for that, the actual G1 Seacon, because we didn't have a sample at the time.
Yeah,
So when you get that package and everything, that's Rick's Seacons on the back of the package.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I did updated label art. Just to make it, because some of them were a little worn, but I recreated the label art, you know, line almost line for line from the sort of 80s patterns, but just added like, you know, some a little bit more rendering detail than you would get, you know, in the 80s. But yeah, I think we just updated the labels, and they're the original product from the 80s in that shoot. Because actually, that was talking about an archaeological dig. We almost had to retool that whole program because they had to really search for the tools for those characters because they hadn't been done in, I don't know how many years, Rick, before that.
I think the last time those were done was in 1999.
Oh, yeah. God Neptune.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which so I actually have back here.
Yeah. So at one point we were thinking about retooling the whole line again, based upon, you know, the original designs. So thankfully, we found the tools. We were able to clean them up, and they were usable, and we could rerun it. So, but yeah, that was a lot of fun.
So, how many years total did you say you worked on the Transformers brand?
Well, I worked. Uh, I I joined the team right after movie one and worked till the third movie. I was let go from Hasbro. Jeez, I worked on a Nerf team my last 2 years at Hasbro. So I think I worked on the Transformers team right up until the launch of Prime.
What would you say would be your favorite thing that you worked on at Hasbro as far as Transformers go?
Oh, well, my favorite thing, I really enjoyed the movie line. I really enjoyed working on the movie lines. But, what was it? The universe figures that Joe Kai did. Help me out, Rick. The ones with the little snap-in weapons. The name's escaping me right now. But we were
driving like every Transformer.
No. The little ones that Joe Kai did.
The Cyberverse ones.
Yes, Cyberverse. That was a lot of fun. You know, getting the figures down to those scales, and even though I didn't work on actual, I helped the team develop the product and get the sculpts and everything done and do the deco. Even though I was working on the exclusive product, so we were working on everything. I was helping the mainline team with the idea that, oh, we're going to take all these characters and we're going to use them for these exclusives. We're going to do these deco variations. So we were planning that in right from the get-go, and like all the different possibilities that little Cyberverse, you know, figures had, just working at that different scale with all the little accessory pieces. That sort of, it was almost like the Green Army Men model for Transformers, which was a lot of fun, especially when you had like a display with like 50 of them all together. That was a lot of fun to work on. And a lot of those, like the Cyberverse figures, I did, you know, 10 different deco variations for, and it just never got old working on. That was a cool line.
You know, I don't have many movie toys in my possession right now. Right now, that shelf right there is the only movie shelf that I have. But that toy right there, Dark of the Moon Hatchet, the little jet that turned into the gargoyle, that. Yeah. Toy is, I love that freaking toy. I mean, it's a movie toy. Yeah. You know, a lot of people have their love hate relationship with it, but there's some gold in there. Me personally, I think the Cyberverse commanders and stuff were some of the best in the movie lines, actually. I liked them mainly because with those figures, it felt like you got more bang for your buck. They're tiny, but yet they're a lot packed into those little tiny figures.
Absolutely. The articulation, everything that, you know, it kind of reminded me of the little die-cast figures from the 80s that they had. You know, they were only like a couple bits of transformation, but you could get so much more play out of it, you know, when you put them all together and you're building that universe. So that's why I think, as far as movie product that I worked on, I think my favorite item might have been the micro the Devastator, the little mini Devastator that all put together.
The best one, because that's the only version of the movie Devastator that actually has individual robot modes.
Yeah, and I worked really closely with Takara because, again, We were going to do it as a U.S. exclusive, and we were putting together the pitch to say we need this much money to do the tooling to get this thing to market. And Takara Tomy saw it and was like, oh, my God, that's a great idea. We're going to do it for our main line. And they were like, we're going to put up the money. We're going to tool this thing. And, you know, and I worked with them, you know, very closely to get all those figures together and get them all so they connected and the Devastator mode. And then we did the different deco variations, and that was a lot of fun. I think that just the intricacy of the connections and the articulation in those figures, that was a great project to work on.
Actually, I think Takara re-released them here in the last year or so under the LG, the Legends line. I believe they did a more movie accurate color or a different color scheme on them and re-released them again.
Nice.
But, now you say you might have worked on Masterpiece quite a bit.
Yes. I did the masterpiece figures I did were Grimlock, Rodimus, the hot rod, a couple variations of Starscream there, well, the different characters. There was these three or four different deco variations of that. We were trying to do, there's a couple of, what was the other one we did? We were going to go release the Optimus again, but I transferred off the team at that time. I didn't know what figure they came out with.
Year of the horse.
The MP10.
Right.
Was that the year of the horse version or the actual MP10? The first.
Did you work on those Toys R Us exclusives? The one, the year of the dragon and the.
No, that was Lenny. So I had transferred off the team right before that. I had switched to the Nerf team by then. So, but yeah, it's weird. It's the way it was set up at Hasbro. I was sort of like a hired gun. They would bring me onto the team. They were like, "Hey, we've got these movies. They're really doing well, but we're shorthanded, and they would bring me on the team. I would jump in there and do the best I could for a couple of years, and then they say, "Oh, we need you over a Nerf," and then I jump over to Nerf. So I would jump around teams. I was on G.I. Joe a couple of years. I was on I was even on Littlest Pet Shop for Strawberry Shortcake for 2 years. So
I always wondered. Now I've got a question about that. From a toy standpoint, working on toys and everything, and I understand that that's your job. If you're working on a girl's brand or something, that's your job. You got to come up with ideas and stuff. As a toy nerd, I can sit here and I'm like, okay, if I were to work for a toy company, I'm like, it might be. I could work on a G.I. Joe or something like that, because I can relate to it. But how do you relate and work on a brand that is aimed at girls and think of something? I've always wondered, how do you get in that mindset?
Well, it was interesting. It was an interesting transition because I was working on Tiger Electronics, which was sort of tween lifestyle products, so
like the little Casio games,
right? Or? Yeah, the electronic LCD games, the Hit clips, the Video Now clips, things like that, and which tended to be, they were more like it was like a 60-40 girl boy split, and it was more heavily leaned towards the girls market with like the music line and things like that. It really wasn't, cause the boys were Nerf action figures and things like that. So Tiger Electronics, had sort of a more girl, direction to sort of the product line. So when Tiger Electronics, disappeared, was phased out, I actually requested, I said, Little's Pet Shop's really cool. It would take me out of my comfort zone. And I always admired the figures. And I said, I would like to work on that line, just to get some experience, and just to see what it was like. And I worked on Strawberry Shortcake and Little's Pet Shop for like 2 years. And when I first joined the team, they told me, they said, our design philosophy is happiness, dreams, and birthday cakes. And I was, coming from, a military background, coming from, Hot Wheels Matchbox, and I was in sort of electronic toys. I was like, okay, how do I build, around this? And it really gave me a chance to sort of expand my imagination, get into like an uncomfortable role of saying, okay, well, what's cool? What's a cool play pattern for, young girls? Is it nurturing? Is it, celebration? Is it dreams? So that was always fun. And then I would always try and slip in like a little bit of a boy play into the product line, where if I was doing sort of a treasure island theme for Littlest Pet Shop, I would always throw in a pirate or something like that, that maybe a girl's designer might not add, but I would put in a sword something to that effect. Just trying to get a little bit in there when I could. I was told many meetings that concept's a little too boyish. So,
well, you know, in this day and age, you know, there really is no line that is there. I mean, from a corporate standpoint, there may be, but I mean, they're not on this podcast on a regular basis, but they are part of this podcast. We have two girls that are a member of this podcast because they're Transformer fans. Yeah. My girlfriend, her daughter, is quickly becoming a huge Transformer fan. Her bed sheets, her comforter, are Transformers now. She went as Optimus Prime for Halloween. For Christmas, and she got Transformers.
RC, you know, you've got all of it. But it was funny because actually when I was on the girls team, they were like, hey, you know, we're shorthanded on the Transformers team. We've got these movies coming out. We need your help. Would you mind joining the team? I actually switched places. There was a girls designer. She was a female designer was doing the exclusives for Transformers, Melissa Jones. And she was doing the exclusives for Transformers. And I switched places with her. She went to the girls team, was working on My Little Pony and Baby Alive, and I switched over and took over the exclusives. So it was just, and literally, I don't think any of the fans could tell the difference or missed a beat. You know, I thought Melissa did a great job on the product line when she was involved in it. So as long as you're true to the brand and true to the characters, I think, you know.
Yeah, and we had Vicky on the team for all those years.
Oh, yeah, Vicky. Exactly. Vicky was part of the team. Yeah, there's, you know, so I think that myself, like I said, I it was fortunate for me. I could hop around from, you know, wherever they needed the extra help on the teams because I didn't like to stay on one brand for too long. And even when I switched from Transformers to Nerf, I worked on two of the big initiatives I worked on were Rebel for the girls to bring out a Nerf girls line and the zombie line. So, I mean, it was like, you know, it's like, okay, you've got Nerf, you're doing it. It's been working. This formula has been working for years. It's like, okay, what can we do different and mix it up? So that was, it's always fun. They keep things, they keep you, on your toes over there, switch it up a lot. So
what do you think is, your proudest accomplishment as far as the work you've done on Transformers?
Oh, boy. The proudest accomplishment?
And there's a ton of figures you've been involved in.
Yeah, I think my proudest, like I said, I think I mentioned it before, but that Deluxe Optimus Prime, the one we did for movie 3, I believe it was, the fact that we did that and that we had sort of planned to do it with the trailer down the road, we had the different weapons. You know, he had his sword, his axe.
Battle blades? Was that it?
Yeah, the battle blades.
Yeah.
I don't know the final name that they went to market with, but just to lobby for A, to get Takara to do Optimus Prime, to get on board with doing Optimus Prime at that scale, because they were like, oh, no, he's the number one character. We've got to keep him, you know, at this size. I think, and then once we did that, then I think Takara said, oh, well, these figures can work at a different size. And that led to the whole cyber, universe. So, figure line, I think that was probably one of my proudest moments on the team.
That was a pretty big accomplishment at the time.
Because
there was no pooling dollars available for the exclusive teams. So to be able to get a whole figure tooled, you can get away with a weapon, a head here and there, but this was the first time since I had been there that we had a whole figure tooled just for the exclusive teams.
Yeah, I think we went and we asked for $30,000 in tooling, which would have gave us just the figure and accessory. And after they saw the pitch and the things that we had planned to do, like the trailer and all the different accessories down the road and bring out different characters at that scale, they upped the budget to $100,000. So it was like, okay, it's like if you can do all that with $30,000, what can you do with $100,000? And that was a pretty good accomplishment, because like Rick said, we a lot of these projects we would get and they would say, you have no budget whatsoever. You know, this is what you can do. You get 5 deco hits and some new packaging and that's it. You know, what are you going to do? So that was always fun, especially because I got to work with Takara Tomy. I got to work with the studio. Got to work with, you know, the team in Rhode Island, and everybody collaborated to make this sort of new scale, to really get behind the new scale, the figure line. That was really cool. I think the some of the other proudest moments, Rick, you were very involved in, were that theming, where we went out to the theming for the movies like the Dark Side of the Moon, the series.
I forget what they were. There was the NASCAR one, I think, for Target or Walmart. Yeah. There was the scanning for TRU. Oh, the Walmart was the moon.
Walmart was the moon. Yeah. What we did was that year we took a whole different approach to the exclusives market. We said, because normally what Walmart would do, they would come in, they would see the mainline product, and they would say, oh, that's a cool figure. We're going to do him in a different deco scheme. And they would see, you know, the mainline figures, and they'd say, oh, Starscream's really popular. We're going to do Starscream in a different deco scheme for, you know, Walmart. And what we did was we said, okay, we've tried that formula for years. We've given these alternative deco versions. People have all these characters in their you know, collections. They already have enough of the same characters. We can't keep giving them more deco variations. What if we did these themes? So we gave Target a theme, Walmart a theme, TRU a theme, and then online a theme. And all the products that we did for those themes, exclusively for those markets, they all sort of tied in with the online promotion, with the print promotion, with everything they had. So that was a pretty large undertaking, because not only do we have to get the Transformers marketing team to buy into it, but then you had to convince each of the retailer to buy into it, because we still had like Target saying, well, you gave Walmart this figure, you know, we want this figure, and or we want that figure. And you had some infighting amongst the retailers, as far as like, it's like, oh, well, you did a really cool exclusive for Walmart. What are you going to do for us? And we were always trying to one up, you know, ourselves. And I think those themes were pretty awesome, and some of the deco variations, and even some of the figures that were included, I think it was a real treat for the fans, the real fans of the product line. They would say it's just like one of those modes when you're at retail and you say, oh my gosh, they did that character, or they put that vehicle back out there. I haven't seen that one in 10 years, or I haven't seen that accessory in, you know, a couple years. That's awesome. So
I think my favorite was definitely that TRU, that trans-scanning, where the figure is molded in clear plastic and then it's just painted with that grid. I think, you know,
man, that was such, I mean, Rick, you made it, that was one of the difficult.
He's breaking up.
Lost you there for a minute, buddy.
Yeah, you're back.
Yeah. The scanning line.
That was an idea that was floating around for a couple of years, right?
It was, but nobody could figure out how to do it in production, at the quantities and to get the consistency right, you know. So I sort of pitched the idea to mold them in translucent, do the deco over them in the fades, and then we had some samples made, and again, when the people saw them, they were just like, you know, this is slam dunk, we have to do it.
Yeah, those figures came out great, and they still haven't done any that theme again with any other figure. There's a lot of characters I like to see with that kind of theme behind them.
I really enjoyed some of the scene packs that we did, but like, I think we set them up as like maybe like a 4 set theme. So like each quarter you might get a new set at retail, and some of the retailers like Walmart or Target sort of ended the program, you know, the third quarter. They didn't let that fourth quarter set get out there. Which sort of ruined the whole theme concepts, but the ones that did get out there were.
Yeah, I think some of those awesome. Team Alliance themes ended up in someone's basement. I don't know.
Yeah, the Alliance themes sort of like people had a they were like, yeah, they sort of missed the mark. But,
you know, I personally think, you know, out of the movie lines, the human alliance, like where you had the humans that could interact with the larger scale vehicles, the whole versus packs, wasn't there like a Bumblebee and a Sideswipe or a Bumblebee and a Barricade?
Yep.
That was a really nice set too. I like that. I believe it was like at an airport or something, wasn't it? It was like they were sitting nose to nose.
I think so.
I'm trying to think.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
We're
old men.
Yeah. I think one of the ones like we did the wreckers, like Rick was talking about the wreckers we did like for like Target wanted, because we were doing some exclusive tooling for Walmart, Target wanted their own exclusive, and we did the sort of NASCAR wreckers.
Oh,
and we did the Human Alliance one. Remember we did the Human Alliance one? And we had originally tooled this up. It was supposed to be a mainline product, and we said, okay, we're gonna launch it through Target. So Target gets it first. They would have it for a 3-month run, and then we would roll it out into the mainline. And I don't think it ever made it.
It never came out.
Yeah,
that was the deluxe
wrecker, right?
The red wrecker car that was a tough car.
Yeah,
that was the deluxe scaled one, and I think it came with the Roadbuster. And that one never came out, but there was a couple package samples that are out there somewhere.
Yeah,
and I don't think Tar ever put that one out either.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what ever happened to that one. It was unfortunate, but it was like it was one of those figures we worked so hard and get the tooling and everything done, and you're 90% of the way, and it just sort of lost its. It wasn't so much the retail market. I think it was more the marketing promotion around the movie had changed. So they weren't really pushing the NASCAR element or the wreckers as much as they were before the movie came out. So it was really weird. It was like sometimes you just don't know what happens with some of these products. You know,
there was also a Human Alliance. The actual Human Alliance scaled Target car was going to come out again.
Well, wasn't the
driver was going to be Augie Cadet.
Oh, wasn't there a Soundwave that just got released by Takara, but not by Hasbro?
Yeah, that was supposed to come out. Well, that was supposed to come out in the last wave of mainline.
Yeah,
there was the Deluxe and then the Human Alliance one. And there were package samples of both of those. That whole last line, there was eight deluxe figures never made it out. There was a Bumblebee, there was a Wheeljack, and G1 Wheeljack colors, the G1 Wheeljack head, and, like movie-styled head.
Wow.
There was Deluxe Soundwave, there was Sound Blaster, there was a... Who was the red... The car from Revenge of the Fallen, the opening movie, Sideways?
Yes. Yep. Yes. The one that got sliced in half.
Right. So yeah. There was a redeco of him in red as Sideswipe. As Mirage, Dino. And I think he might have had a new head. And those all got canceled out. And the line Soundwave got canceled out. And that was also the time the last set of Reveal the Shield basic figures got canceled.
Yeah, see, he's got a great memory with all the figures. I had to go back and look at all my old art files to see. I had to reacquaint myself with what figures I actually worked on.
There's a whole bunch of exclusives that never came out. Some 2-packs, some 3-packs.
Yeah.
They made it the final packaging samples, and they never came out. And it was only until recently that Barricade Soundwave 2-pack that the Human Alliance Soundwave ever saw the light of day.
Yeah, actually,
I think that was the first release of it.
I think that's the only release of it that I've seen. Now, of the masterpieces that you did, you said you were talking about earlier the masterpiece Sunstorm that came out, what was it, a couple years ago? Was it now?
Yeah, that was Takara, right?
Takara. No, we had a Toys R Us. Yeah.
All right.
But it was a completely new deco from what Wayne had done.
Oh, it did?
Yeah.
So the ghost flames. Okay. Speaking of ghosts, my printer just comes alive.
the one that Wayne had done actually was a little bit cooler than the one that actually came out at retail. They may have seen it because there was a painted model of it floating around the office, and they may have drawn inspiration from it. But
yeah, I think what they did was they took our deco, they simplified it. There was a painted sample that was floating around. I'm trying to find my deco file right now.
I remember the painted sample of the space case in the G2 colors got painted over, and that doesn't exist anymore. And then I think the Wasp got misplaced. Somebody threw that out, or it ended up in someone's basement.
No, the ghost, I think that was... I don't know how I could share this image with you, but I just brought up my old deco file.
There is
a one button. File.
If you go up to on the left part of the video, there should be a little slide panel comes over. It says share or screen share.
Okay. Yep, screen share. There you go. Let's see if I get it here. How's that? Can you see that?
Oh.
There
yeah,
it is.
See?
There it is. So
we actually had a painted model of that.
Yeah.
That is gorgeous.
So, I mean, that was my deco I did for the Sunstorm. And, yeah, we did have a painted sample that was floating around. And everybody, like I said, they were really excited to do this one, but it was one of those items that we had already done two versions of this masterpiece item. So they said, okay, we're going to hold off on this sample. We're going to do another character masterpiece and then come out with this one later.
I'm going to grab yeah,
and this is based off the original masterpiece Starscream, not the newer one.
No, not the newer one. This was the original one, yeah.
Wayne, for sharing that. Yeah, you can see the date on there. Oh, look, it's almost 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Today.
Oh, yeah, like a couple of days ago. Yeah, right. Yeah. 1/5/10. Holy smokes. And this was, too, like, because these were masterpiece, like, the mainline figures would only have 20 deco hits. We had, on this one, we had almost 100. Mm-hmm. I think it was right around... Where's the deco count on this sheet? I think it was right around 90 deco hits on this version.
See, this is the one that we actually got right here.
Okay.
Now it's very close to that. I mean, you can tell the flames. What we refer to as the ghost flames. It's like if you in a certain light, you can't even see them, but you turn it to a different light, and then they just like come to life there.
Yeah, the matte on gloss or the gloss on matte deco. Yeah, that was something that we had started with the whole scanning series, right, Rick? When you would turn the figure into the light, you would see the glyphs on the deco, something like that. So, all right,
let me see. Oh, the cyberglyphs one. That's another one you did.
Yeah, the cyberglyphs.
Right, cyberglyphs.
Yeah. So how do I?
All those glyphs actually translated into something. And have it written down what they all meant. And
each figure had like a message on it or something.
Right. Nothing vulgar, just like it was the character's name or some designer's name or something.
Okay, nothing like Snozzberries on.
That was cool. There you go. I didn't know I could share that image with you guys, so I'm glad I could share that with you.
Awesome. Yeah, that's some great stuff. If you have any other things to share, you want to share. that Sunstorm. A lot of people I love this deco. I mean, it's kind of like one of those retcon characters that you guys at Hasbro went back and said, okay, you know, Dreamwave really made this guy a thing back in the day. And you know, well, back in the day, he's only, what, 15 years ago or so now. But still, it's just Sunstorm is one of those gorgeous, it's so bright and in your face, you know. Just love the deco on that, and to see where they got the basis for this at is really awesome. I thank you again for sharing that. That's
You know, you see how an idea starts off and then it changes over time. So that's a really good example of that.
Yeah. Now, is there anything that you fought tooth and nail for? Like you did some research and you're like, oh, I want to do that as an exclusive. I've got to do that. You fought tooth and nail for it, but it just never happened.
Ooh. Well, that happened all the time. So I'm trying to think of some instances where that might, cause that was like the, you know, I would go in and, I would pitch, you know, 10 ideas and maybe walk out with 3 that got the green light. So I'm trying to think if there's anything. Do you?
I think remember something about reusing some of the G1 Autobot cars from like the early 80s.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Like we did that. I'm trying to think. We did some after we did the C-Cons. We tried to go back and do some G1, G2 figures. And we tried to resurrect a lot of old tooling, and some of the tools were just so worn out
from
all the use. And the money involved in rehabbing or making new tools of some of those figures didn't go. Like, we wanted to do, like, G2 Megatron, you know, even
the Headmasters is one that you brought up.
Right.
About reissuing those guys.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. Jeez.
So the tools for those are too worn out, or?
Yeah, sometimes the tools couldn't be located, or you might find the body and not the head, or you might find, you know, 2 characters instead of, you know, we would need 5 to make like sort of a line.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes if it was just one off, they said, no, you know, this, we're not getting our return on investment, so we would have to do 2 or 3 more characters, and that was, you know, a couple $100,000 in tooling. So, you know, some of those things, it was really, it was always like, because like Rick said, we didn't have really a budget or anything to work with. We were working on, we would go out there and we'd take a look at the main line, take a look at the archives and everything that's been done and say, okay, what can we put together here to come up with a new character, a new program, a new theme, with minimal investment, but a lot of impact, you know, big payoff. And sometimes, you know, we would just say, well, you can't do that with what's existing. We have to tool this, or we have to. And then it would be, not only would I have to go and, you know, present that to the Transformers team, but then you have to go present it to all of design management or whatever, because they're saying, well, Transformers team doesn't have any more money. So we're going to have to take this money from the girls team, or we're going to have to take it from the Nerf team or whatever. So you have to go and negotiate with these guys, and you know, it's just really try and sell, you know, this is why we have to do this. These characters haven't been out for 20 years, you know, we have to do this. And you know, sometimes, you know, if they're a Transformer fan or if they're a fan of the product line in general, they say, oh, you're absolutely right, we have to do this, we get behind you. And other times they're like, well, that might be a stretch, you know. It's like Headmasters, I don't know, did they do that well when they were actually, you know, in the main line in the first place?
And apparently, and so, because the next main line is focusing solely on those.
Yeah, like I remember we wanted to resurrect Beast Wars, like sort of as an exclusive line before it was getting any attention, you know, right, sort of the main line. Yeah, we wanted to resurrect Beast Wars and do it. Yeah, we wanted to do it solely as an exclusive line that would be owned by exclusives. So you would get one character at Walmart, one at Target, one at TRU, and it was a great program. We were going to resurrect it, do all these new characters, and we couldn't get the retailers to agree to do it. They were like, no, I don't want to do the same figure that, or I don't want to do the same program that Walmart's doing. I want to do, you know, my own thing.
Or it was too off-brand.
Yeah, it was too off-brand. Like Beast Wars, because there was no comic books, no animation, anything being done out there recently, they figured, why would we do that? Why would we invest in that when we're putting all this money into the movies? So that was always,
that might be something to be pitched this year, because this is the 20th anniversary of Beast Wars, and I'm sure, you know, retailers could look at something like that. Hey, there's a lot of nostalgia circulating around it.
Yeah, and that would be great. I think if the Transformers team did that, that would be, I mean, the fans would go crazy. They would love that, you know, because there's a whole, you know, another line of figures that could be updated, brought out, and, you know, redone, you know, for the modern fan or for this generation of fans.
And at least while I was there, I mean, we eventually got a list of all the tooling from Beast Wars that was still viable, and it was almost every single figure was still available and still in good use for us to use. And we never got anywhere with it. And then when Transformers Beast Hunters came around, I pulled out that list and I said, hey, here are all the dragons or the monster guys. You gotta make some of these guys exclusives. And they're it just never materialized, unfortunately. But I was really trying to push some of those Beast Wars figures out again, especially for Beast Hunters.
Yeah, it would be interesting if they do something with that. I mean, because there was always talk, because like one of the things you touched on sort of was the anniversary, you know, and we would always remind, you know, marketing or the design team, say, hey, we have this anniversary coming up. You know, what can we do? You know, what can we do with this figure? What can we do whether? Because I think, you know, Rick and I were looking at the G2 line. It was sort of an anniversary idea, you know, for that. And everybody was so focused on, if they're doing a classic character, it was always G1. It was always, you know, it was always the G1 guys. So we're thinking about, you know, redoing some of those figures. And again, I was like, well, that's kind of a stretch. Is that really what you want to promote? You know, so we've got these movies out there. Don't you want to do something that promotes the movies? So that, you know, it's always a part of the fun, going and pitching these ideas and seeing which ones, you know, resonate with everybody.
And it always depends on who's working on a marketing team that particular week. Some people would say, no girls, get any girls in your figure line. Other people would say, yeah, all right, let's make some girls. Yeah. So it really kind of depends who happens to be at the top of the food chain that week.
Yeah. So, you know, we're approaching the two. Well, actually, we've passed the 2-hour mark now for the show.
Oh, wow.
We generally try to keep it to an hour and a half to two. But is there any in closing? Is there any anecdotes or anything that you want to share with us that the fans and listeners may be interested in seeing or hearing?
Special memory about me or.
That is PG rated.
About, you know, my charisma or something.
Yeah, you know, I always, like I said, I was always sort of a hired gun when it came to designing. So I had always admired, like you had Eric on earlier, and I'd always admired like Eric and Aaron Archer, Bill Raleigh, Lenny, all these guys that work on the brand, that have worked on it for years, Joe Kide, all these guys that have so much knowledge of the brand, of the animated series, the movies, they're just walking encyclopedias, walking you know, wikis of info, and just to work with those guys was really rewarding for me, because I've always been a fan of Transformers, G.I. Joe, all the great, you know, shows from the 80s and everything growing up. And you know, working at Hasbro and working at, on the Transformers team, especially when they were launching those movies, for me, that was probably one of the most rewarding, you know, things being, you know, while I was working at Hasbro, you know, we would go to Comic-Con and BotCon and see all the hype around the figures and the celebrities. And we could sort of stand on the sidelines and say, yeah, we did that, you know, character that he's the voice of, or, you know, you might get to meet, you know, Peter Cullen or somebody like that. So that, for me, that was always one of the most rewarding aspects of the job, just the people we worked with. They're so talented and so dedicated to the brand and getting it right for the consumers that was really awesome to work with those guys.
Well, you know, there's such a love-hate relationship with the movie lines and everything. You know, people hate the Michael Bay influence and everything, but quite frankly, there's some great stuff that come out of the movies. I mean, I personally think the first movie was not terrible. I loved it. You know,
yeah.
Age of Extinction, though, however, the fourth one, I still have trouble getting past 45 minutes in it.
Yeah, that was a little bit tough to watch, but I think we found a Transformer. But
yeah.
When you watch it, you're taken back, you know, like, oh, I remember these characters as a kid and everything. So you wanted some tidbit of information, something for the fans. I think here's something like when working with Michael Bay, the first thing he would always ask us whenever we started working on a new movie was, which character can I kill?
Yeah.
And that was how he approached it. He's like, I've got to kill somebody. Who can I kill off? wait a minute. You know. So I think that's a little bit of info maybe the fans might not know or might not hear. That's sort of inside info.
I remember movie 3, he was pushing to kill off Bumblebee at the end.
Yes. Yeah, he wanted. I mean, he was always like, Ironhide's got to go. You know,
no, of course, Hasbro corporate said no. That's our cash cow.
Yeah. It was always a balancing act.
There's always that image floating out there somewhere. I can't remember where it was, but somebody took a picture of a toy aisle that literally every toy on the peg was Bumblebee. Every single toy was Bumblebee. But, you know, I mean, as I was getting ready to say, though, the movie lines, there's a love-hate relationship there, but you cannot deny that the live-action movies reinvigorated a lot of people that had forgotten about the Transformers brand, and it put it back into the public. It's in the public limelight now. You know, I mean, you can't go anywhere without seeing something with Transformers or an Autobot or a Decepticon insignia on it, you know. And for you to have been a part of working on those is something really special to take away from that and say, you know, I had a lot to do with that. And as a longtime fan, I've got to say thank you. You know, I mean, there's some great stuff there.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much. That was one thing that was always, like I said, you know, working with the team and everything, one of the most rewarding parts of the job. But just getting out there and like meeting with the fans, especially like going to a BotCon, and that was always educational for me because, I mean, you can't get anything by these fans. You try and say, you know, hey, you know, I wanted to do this character, but we couldn't get the likeness just right, or we couldn't do this deco. They'll call you on it. And so we always had to there was a lot of checks and balances, and the fans were always one of those checks and balances in the development of the product. So, I mean, yourself and Rick and everybody that's involved in your podcast and all, I mean, it's like we appreciate everything you guys do as well. So I think, you know, if we design toys that you guys appreciate, I think that's a win in my book. That's where it counts, man. So, I mean, they have to be fun to play with, but the fact that like a Transformer, not only you can play with it, but you can put it on like your displays back there and it looks amazing. That just says a lot. So,
yeah. I mean, a lot of people sit there and, you know, I've got coworkers. I'm like, I'm 40 years old. I turned 41 this year, you know, and I've got a room full of toys. I'm not ashamed of it because it's, you know, it has meaning to me and damn it, they're cool, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, you guys that work for the toy companies and have worked for the toy companies, you know, you've got to have a love for what you're doing. Before you can even do anything on it. If you don't love toys, if you don't love the characters, it shows in the work. But if you do love the toys and you do love just toys in general, you know, you got to be a bit of a child at heart. And that's part of why we're here as a podcast. You know, I mean, we talk about the toys, we talk about the fans, we talk about the shows, And it's part of our lives as a hobby. You know, some people tinker on cars, some people go fishing. You know, we collect plastic crack, you know, and you know, and it's great to have guys like you, like Rick, like Eric on here, who have had hands on and behind the scenes, you know, and have information and insight on how it's done and everything. I just want to thank you for all the hard work you've done, all the cool stuff that you've put out. I wish I'd had a chance to say that to Eric too, but I'd like to have you both on again sometime.
Oh, well, you know, I appreciate it. This has been a great experience. This is one of my first podcasts interacting with the fans of Transformers. I've done a couple for G.I. Joe in the past, but this is my first one, the Transformers guys. So I really appreciate you giving me a call and including me in the discussion.
Thank Absolutely. You. Absolutely.
Wayne, thanks for coming on today, man.
Yeah, you guys, you know, this has been great. I really appreciate it, and I would love to do it again in the future. If there's anything you guys would like to talk about, please let me know.
Absolutely. Well, before we wrap, Brett, is there any – I know you've got a bad headache. Is there any question you want to ask before we wrap?
No, I think you guys handled it.
Yeah. Hey, Brett, I love your Shogun Warriors collection back there, man.
Like
good stuff. Yeah, stuff, man.
Love him.
That's why I got my big Optimus. He's in the background there. He keeps me company.
Yeah, there you go.
Absolutely. All right, guys. This has been Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, episode number 183. Follow us on Twitter at TFYLP. We also have a Facebook group, and you can also find everything you want to find out about TFYLP on tftalk.net, our website. Again, check out our sponsors, CaptorPrey.com and Mega Toy Fan. We will see you next time on Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure. I'm Daron, along with Brett and Rick. I want to thank Eric and Wayne, both of you, for joining us this evening. It's been a pleasure. We'll see you next time on TFYLP.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Take it easy, Wayne.
Hey, yep.
This has been Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, a presentation of TFTalk.net. We'd like to thank you for listening and ask that you please rate us on your favorite podcast outlet and share us with your friends. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at TFYLP. Email us at podcast@TFYLP.com. This is Paul Lighting, and on behalf of TFYLP, we'd like to thank you again for listening. And we hope you'll join us next time for another TFYLP.